without anyone else. I've been making good decisions. Cook the perfect day, I open up my shell. I've been on a new religion. Things are in their place, all kept in a row. Soon as they feel safe, I get bored. Why do I have to be so cynical? Get me off my feet, that's typical. Why do I feel at peace?
Happy Thursday, Wisconsin. It's Thursday. You know what that means. It means that if it usually says it's time for the Maggie Dawn Show, then that's a lie, because it's Thursday. It means it's the Maggie Dawn Show with Anya. A very important distinction, minute, but important, like me. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show. As I've already alluded to, Maggie is not here. Why? Because it is the holidays. Maggie is off. I genuinely don't know where she is, but if I had to guess, I would bet that she is up skiing somewhere. I think she'd be very good at skiing, Maggie. I think she's got the athletics for it. And also, I just imagine her as someone who would be very intimidating on a pair of skis. I think she'd be very fast, but also she'd know how to brake very fast. And that's almost scarier. What's not scary are the things we're going to talk about today, which are a strange menagerie of topics. We're going to reflect on the life of Senator Herb Kohl, who passed today. I have some notes on him and his legacy and what it means to stand by your values, something I think that Herb Kohl was an incredible example of. We're also going to talk about the ongoing debacle, not just in Wisconsin, but countrywide, universities cutting certain programs. And why are these programs being cut? The answer so often is, well, we can't sustain programs that are kind of dead weight. We can't sustain these programs that don't have enough graduates. We can't sustain these sort of, especially when it comes to cutting the arts, the statement is, well, we're bankrolling something that is sort of freeloading off of us. But I have quite an interesting example, an example that I think serves as a great refutation, that it is art students who are freeloading off of the university systems, when perhaps it is very much the university systems who enjoy certain larger benefits of having students with such creative forces, such creative skills behind them. But we'll get into that in a little bit. First of all, let's discuss the topic of today, the passing of Senator Herb Kohl. If you're not aware of who Herb Kohl was, I would be sort of amazed. I must think that you're listening to us on some sort of massive satellite across the world where terms like the Milwaukee Bucks and the Green Bay Packers are just as foreign to you as the name Herb Kohl. And in fact, I would hazard a guess that many of our listeners today know more about the legacy of this man than I, because having been born at the end of the 90s, a lot of my knowledge and awareness of Herb Kohl came when I was, you know, over the age of 10, past the year 2008. He was kind of already, to me, someone who had was very important and very philanthropic, but his story had kind of, he had done some of these huge feats, and so I wasn't so aware of them. For example, his purchase of the Milwaukee Bucks. In this past year, we've spoken a lot about the potential for the Brewers to depart from Milwaukee, and sort of the concept or the statement that's been floated is someone sort of has to choose to buy these teams, or someone has to choose to put this money forward sort of at an initial loss. And it's, you know, not every business person, despite that idea kind of being a core component of business, not everyone was always willing to do that. Herb Kohl set this very incredible example of purchasing the Bucks, putting the money forward, ensuring that the Bucks remained in Milwaukee, even when on not just on paper, in practice, that's a terrible investment to make. If the only return you are factoring for is actual money, actual return on investment of getting your money back for what you put in. And instead of only making business choices that he felt would lead to an immediate and obvious and 100% and then some ROI, he chose to invest in, he chose to put his money behind things that the communities around him needed or wanted or just should have, even when that purchase was not really financially beneficial to him. I think that is such an interesting example that I quite frankly see so few rich people, to use kind of, you know, not the most respectful term for what Herb Kohl was. He was a philanthropist for him, but other people like him, rich people, who in many instances make or had less money than Herb Kohl. Something I read today said that his net worth was never explicitly stated, but it was estimated to be between $600 million and even potentially as high as $1.2 billion. That was a Forbes estimate in 2016, it seems. There are people who you can 100% categorize as being rich people who make far less than what that minimum projected number was, less than $600 million in their life or in a year or in their career, whatever time frame you want. Folks who make less than that, or sorry, folks who make more than that and are even more stingy with it. People who had more to give than Herb Kohl and have either in their life lived up to this moment or the life that they lived before they died, gave even less, despite having the ability to give even more than this gentleman. That is not only a legacy to follow in theory, I think it is such an incredible legacy to put forward as an expectation. In, not to do the thing I always do when I come on air where I go, not to always talk about Judaism, but not to always talk about Judaism. But we have a word for this, and I should note, I quite frankly found out Herb Kohl was Jewish today while doing the research for this episode. So I don't tack this on because I only speak on things that relate even tangentially to the Jewish community. I bring it up because he very much was a living example of a value we have a term for in Hebrew called tzedakah. And when we talk about tzedakah in English, the English word we usually translate for it is charity, which is like kind of close. It's kind of like translating, it's kind of like then translating the word charity as giving money away, which isn't quite right, is it? Tzedakah, the parts of it that don't translate into English very well, is that it is not just the charitable act of dispensing money towards important topics and needs. It is also to dispense, to give your time, your energy, your passion, your power, the things that the folks you advocate for do not have in spare. They do not have enough energy or time, these things to spare, to be able to do the things that money can't afford. Herb Kohl's work in education goes beyond simply the payment of paying more teachers or building more buildings, though he did do these things and they are admirable and direct forms of action that all of us, more wealthy or less wealthy than Herb Kohl, we should all be engaging in those forms of direct action by paying people more. But he also invested in things that allowed for the continuation of education that is not just related to something that goes on a budget or someone whose time receives a paycheck. To invest in cultural standards, cultural practices that say, we want to ensure our children can read, that the people around us are safe and happy, that our cities are well-funded, that our basketball team, despite having a couple lousy seasons, can stick around, because those sort of things provide, if nothing else, to not speak of the economic factor, the quality of life of living in a community, a kehila in Hebrew, something that goes beyond just, you know, plunking some coins into the charity bin and saying the problem will go about sorting out itself. Herb Kohl's lived actions, his lived resume of values, speaks to something we can all enact, I think, a little bit more of in 2024, which is to do the good that you want to see in the world. This is going to sound really stupid, but I remember seeing this quote on the back of a t-shirt in high school a lot, and I cannot remember for the life of me if this is a quote from Gandhi or Dr. Seuss, and what an incredible pair to get confused, may I say. But the quote was, be the good you want to see in the world, or be the change you want to see in the world. And if it wouldn't cause me to stop speaking entirely, thus leaving you with dead air, I would Google which of the two said it. Was it Mahatma Gandhi or perhaps Dr. Seuss? And if you want to do that research for me quick and text it in or call it in, you can do so at 844-967-2789. Before we go to some important announcements, some important messages. But to reflect, that was almost an English word, but to reflect, before we head to those messages one more time on, again, the incredible lived, the incredible repertoire of choices. Is that an idea we can put forward? The lifetime of choices Herb Kohl made were choices that, unlike many politicians, unlike many businessmen, unlike many people, frankly, were a series of choices actually in line with the values that he preached to people. This quote that I love that was pointed out to me today was when he was asked why he gave, he essentially said, because it was the right thing to do. And it's such a simple answer. And yet, in some ways, it is the only right answer. And it helps me feel a little less cynical. Speaking of cynical, this is the song Cynical by the singer M.A. Please enjoy. It's unfortunate, and then suddenly my life's in ruin. My smile never ends when my heart beats. UAUK. Back to this, the Maggie Dawn Show with me, not Maggie Dawn. It's Anya, her producer. You know how it goes. We are back. I've just wrapped up speaking on the loss of today. And truly, so rarely, you know, we receive so much news of so many celebrities dying. I think some people point at 2016 and say, like, that was the year that, like, every celebrity. There were so many huge celebrity deaths, and I think really we're just very inundated with how many important people there are in the world. Important can be good, important can be bad. And when, of course, whenever anyone dies, just about anyone, right? It's a very sad event. But to talk about the loss of today, that being the loss of late Senator, Wisconsin Senator Herb Kohl. I don't know why I said it Herb there. I apologize. Herb Kohl. The outpouring of devastation and sadness for the loss of this person speaks to something greater than just celebrity fame being known. It speaks to legacy. It speaks to what a legacy is and can be. That a legacy can be something that one leaves behind that is genuinely, I feel like I'm sort of explaining just the definition of the word, but in today's age, to me, there is this feeling of so few good people making good choices, so few good people in good positions to be able to make the most good choice that they could for themselves and for everyone. And Herb Cole truly was one of maybe very few people that I can think of naming. I would put him in the same echelon as Bill Gates. I would put him alongside, this is a fun fact too, the Little Caesars founder, I'm trying to find his name, Mike Ilitch. I would put him in the same echelon as this gentleman. He was the founder of Little Caesars, and he just, totally unrelated to the situation, used some of that Little Caesars money. He funded the rent for Rosa Parks's apartment for decades until I'm not sure who passed first or what the end of that was, but he was just a guy who made a lot of money making a pizza franchise. He wasn't part of the Montgomery bus, what's the word I'm looking for here? Protests. He wasn't a part of any of that. He just was a guy who had some money and could say, you know what, Ms. Parks, let me take care of this for you because I can. And you have taken care of so much else. I think that's so good. And an example, truly an actionable example in a time where so often I think the phrase, what can we do, is followed with things that feel completely unobtainable to the working class person. What's completely obtainable to the working class person is to call into this show if you'd like to. And if you do so, you will find yourself among the ranks of such incredible callers as Joanne from Madison. Joanne, how are you? And you said you had a Herb Cole story, I believe.
Yes, indeedy. It's an amazing story. Herb Cole never needed to write an email or use the internet because he always had people around him, secretaries, layers of secretaries, and all of that. And what happened? He had a staffer as a senator. He had a staffer who was very well versed with computing, and of course, we're talking a couple decades ago,
sure.
And of course, you know, the world was exploding with all this computer stuff and all of that, and Herb relied on the staffer to help him and all that. And when the staffer was 27 years old, he died of some type of cancer, and it just devastated Senator Cole. And I was one of the lucky ones who was called in to give him some advice. I teach and write some books and stuff like that. I was called.
Don't downplay what you do. You're a big, important person, and some other big, important people asked you to come be big and important. I see you. I feel you. Go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there are three of us, and what happened was that he wanted to know what the excitement was all about with the 27-year-old dying. He literally told us he wanted to carry the 27-year-old's legacy forward.
Wow.
And so when I heard you talking, I thought, I've got to tell that story, because I hope we can carry Senator Cole's legacy forward and be statespeople in the broadest and most important sense of the word, and look into new technologies when they're exciting and all of that. And even if we don't have 27-year-old brilliant staffers who are going to be dying and having things like that happen to us, we're called to explore the future. And to see this person who, we had to explain what email was. I mean,
right.
You know, why is that so important? You know, he just didn't know. And so, again, this was decades ago. I mean, he more than caught on, you know, as we all did, you know, as the world did during that period. But, again, that is a wonderful legacy. And just one more note for the young people. Do find some Smothers Brothers memorabilia, because Tom Smothers also had an incredible sense of giving to the world. And he also He lost his career, basically. The Smothers Brothers were kicked off TV because of the war, because I lived through those years. He was kicked off TV because almost every show had something anti-war. So again, Smothers Brothers should be an assignment to all of us to relive some of those very exciting days and be inspired to take those risks when we need to, even if it costs us our careers. And I hope that no one will ever take your career away, because Anya, these shows have been wonderful, and bless you, and thank you again for allowing me to share that little tidbit about Senator Cole.
Well, and thank you for sharing it, Joanne. I mean, I couldn't ask for a better statement. What a incredible thing to have you have been in the room to hear him say this. What a terrible loss of the young staffer. And to say that Herb Cole, as you've attested to, spoke to at the time the idea of carrying on that young man's legacy. Again, I'll say it as I always do, not to always talk about Judaism, but we don't really say and Herb Cole being a Jewish and the descendant of Jewish immigrants from Russia, we don't say when someone passes away, you can say it, but our version of rest in peace is not to say rest in peace. What we say in English or in Hebrew is may their memory be a blessing. And this sort of speaks to this idea that even that this person is gone from us in the immediacy of the physical and the tangible, the living and the here and now, may the memory of them, that which they performed and that which they advised and that which they did with their time on earth, may that memory that we hold of them be a blessing, not just one, a blessing that warms us and makes us happy to think of times with this person who we, of course, would dearly miss, but additionally, that we may reflect on the legacy of this young staffer that you brought up, and now additionally, Herb Cole, that we may welcome back to the bottom of the hour of the Maggie Dawn Show, featuring 0% Maggie Dawn today and a 100% forecast of Anya, me, her producer. Hey, in the first half, we were talking about the unfortunate passing of former Senator, late Senator Herb Cole, his legacy of philanthropy, his legacy of giving to education, of ensuring that even when something was expensive, even when something had to be done initially at a loss, if it needed to be done, it got done. Maybe one of the few instances where I lean towards the Machiavellian phrase that the ends justify the means, when the means are taking upon yourself a certain amount of additional suffering, like purchasing the Bucks when they'd had a couple pretty bad seasons, or taking it upon yourself to get the buildings built, the places built, the institutions built that needed to be built in order for your community to continue to have strong educational support. One place that isn't doing that is just about every university in America, if I'm being frank. Maybe not universities, but rather, especially when it comes to these different groupings of folks around universities, these boards of regents and these different legislative groups in charge of what gets what kind of money. I was sitting at home last night, stressing, just because that's kind of how I naturally am. I'm just kind of always stressed, but additionally stressed because I was like, I truly don't know what I'm going to come to air tomorrow and talk about. I thought about sort of rehashing the book ban issue. If you didn't hear my show last Thursday, a week ago, called Book Ban, Book and Bans and Ban and Books, about all the book bans happening in Wisconsin. You should take a listen to that. But I thought I don't want to rehash the exact same book issue. I want to talk about education, but I don't want to go back to, you know, these instances where individuals are just sort of submitting lists and saying, please get rid of all the books that have the word sex in them. It's like, well, we're not going to do that. I'm more concerned about these institutions like the one at the West Virginia University plans to continue slashing several of their arts departments. I found out about this, as I said, last night. I was sitting at home stressed when my partner called me into the room. He said, you have to take a look at this interview. And I go, why? It's a CNN interview between Christine Amanpour. I hope I'm saying that right. Christine Amanpour of CNN. She was interviewing a writer for The Atlantic, Michael Powell, about West Virginia University and their plan. They claim they're having some budget issues. There's always a budget issue, isn't there? There's always a budget to be balanced. Something else Herb Kohl talked about in his life, about trying to get budgets balanced, right? Back when being a businessman in the Senate or the Congress was an uncommon thing and not a prerequisite. This writer and this CNN reporter are having this conversation about these arts programs at West Virginia that are going to get cut. And this writer makes a very important, very interesting note that one of the programs getting cut would be the puppetry department. And I can sort of hear the conservative laughter from afar. The ridiculousness of the liberal arts program. The most liberal of the arts. Puppetry. And I can hear you laughing. Anya, are you going to come out here swinging and say, how dare you cut the puppetry program? As if a puppetry program could ever be anything other than a financial leech on an institution like a state university. And then Mr. Powell, what is his first name? Michael Powell. Pretty common name. A couple other famous Mike Powells I can think of right now. Michael Powell continues that this particular puppetry department, one of only two puppetry majors you can pursue in the U.S., two puppetry departments with majors, has a 100% postgraduate placement rate. 100% of the students coming out of the West Virginia University puppetry BFA department, Bachelor of the Fine Arts department, 100% of them are getting a job in that field coming out of college. Look me in my radio eyes. Don't really. Don't look away from the road. But look out at the road with a stern look and tell me what other discipline in a university system puts out 100% graduation placement rate and is met the very next year with the potential of being completely cut. Not just we're going to take 1/4 of your employees, like the UWDEI proposition that was voted on once and then revoted on. Not we're going to reduce your hours, the number of classrooms, the amount of funding you get. None of that. We are going to completely eviscerate, completely annihilate, completely destroy, eliminate. First of all, 50%. Of the puppetry departments in the U.S. with a major. If this goes away, there will leave only one in the U.S. And this is one that, again, a 99% or a 90% postgraduate placement rate is near unheard of, I feel. Not unheard of, but it is something worth celebrating, is it not? Would you not, as an alumni of an institution, get a pamphlet? Hey, remember how you came here for your civil engineering degree? Well, this year, 100% of our civil engineers found jobs. Send us some money because we're doing so good. I'll tell you what. I have friends who were graduates of the UW Stevens Point art programs in the last 1 and 2 years of their existence. again, there are still art programs up there, I believe, but friends whose programs were cut as they were essentially sprinting out the door with their degree, trying to finish on time. And when they receive letters from UW Stevens Point, or more likely telemarketing calls, saying, hey, it's us, that university who gave you that cool degree you definitely got a job with. Would you send us some money? We want a gift. As John Mulaney would say, we want a gift, but only if it's money. My friends from Stevens Point, when they receive those calls, laugh out loud in the telemarketer's ear. Where would my money go? They ask. The degree I got from you is not one you provide anymore. And you gutted my degree for things. Again, this isn't to put down the fields I'm about to name. But when you're a university and you gut arts to fund, for example, in Point, aquaponics, I'm a big fan of aquaponics. I think it's really, really cool that we can grow stuff on water. And I think it's totally valid and something that we should have a degree in. But it's crazy to me that the statement continues to be, we have to cut these arts programs and we have to cut these, especially these things that seem so superfluous, like puppetry. Puppetry is ridiculous. It's stupid. It's for kids. Yeah, well, someone's clearly scared of the puppeteers. Because how else do you get away with cutting a program that can look at you and say, oh, you think the kid operating Big Bird is weird? He got a job out the gate. All of our kids did. You can't go up against numbers like that and say, this is about cutting degrees that lead to dead-end careers. This is about cutting degrees that don't lead to students who have enough money to give when they do get that alumni call. This is about cutting degrees, cutting departments, cutting costs on things that are inherently a sink, a deficit, a detraction from the university because those funds are being misspent. How dare you spend any of our budget on felt and craft scissors and sticks and things? Yet you have a program where everyone who comes out of it gets a job in what they were looking for. Not just a job. Think of, sure, almost everyone knows someone who got a degree, worked really hard for that degree, and then went on to never get a job in that actual field. Like, oh yeah, he actually has a master's in physics. But he's like a crime writer. This is what he wanted to do. Okay, that's fine. He's got a placement, but we wouldn't count him towards that 100% in field placement. We're talking people who said they wanted their job to be handle puppet, and they got a job where their job was handle puppet. All of them. Not your law school, not your engineering school, not your nursing school, but your puppetry school does that. And you return the favor by not only slamming the door in the faces of the people who have just graduated, but can we discuss how over the course of COVID, especially, universities just kind of shutting these programs down, or worse, in the instance of certain universities in Wisconsin, entire universities just shutting down, sometimes overnight, sometimes with a few weeks or the rest of the semester to figure things out. Can we discuss the incredible, incredible stress that puts upon our student populations to problem solve in instances where our university community, between our Board of Regents, our legislators, and our staff and faculty, cannot problem solve amongst themselves? Because cutting useful programs, yes, I'm calling puppetry a useful program, is not actual problem solving. If you're looking at a house that's on fire and you go, we need to solve this problem, and you take a potted plant that was just fine on its own and you dump it upside down, you've not done anything to go about solving the problem. If the puppetry department, if all their kids are going out and getting good paying jobs, guess which department is probably far more likely to get something closer to a 100% return rate on those calls for financial support. In the first part of the show, I mean, we spoke again, to bring it back, we spoke of Herb Kohl and his incredible work of philanthropy, going back to not only his own community and his own school, but the communities and the schools of this state, because for him, this entire state was his community. And you do for your community that which needs to be done to keep the things that are successful, successful. And then those successful things can go on, you know, kind of like an investment. It's funny how these things make sense when we talk about them in stocks. You put a little in now, even though it doesn't look like much. And over time, as you allow it to grow, it will turn into something better. It's interesting how we get that in terms of bonds and stocks and stocks and bonds and whatnot. But not things like investing in the arts in our state, investing in the arts in our nation, investing in one of the few arts programs of its type, not just on the basis of the medium we're discussing, that being puppetry, but one of the few departments where all their kids that are finishing their degree are getting jobs. In what other instance is that a given? In what other instance is that a statistic that one can raise their nose at? I can't think of any. Taking you to the break is Demons by Doja Cat. And when we come back, we're gonna wrap up by talking about how this, the arts discussion, the DEI discussion, the funding discussion in Wisconsin all relates back. And the things that we consider to be, how do we phrase it? Stains on our institutions? Don't go away.
For the hell of it, addicted to betrayal, but you're relevant. You're terrified to look down, 'cause if you dare, you see the glare of everyone you burn just to get there. It's coming back around. And I keep my side of the street clean. You wouldn't know what I mean.
Welcome back to the Maggie Dawn Show with me, Anya, and a little bit more Taylor Swift, because, you know, I can't help myself. You leave me alone with this board and they say, Anya, you get to play whatever music you want. Here's the whole world of FCC available, FCC clean music. And I go, I want Taylor. It's all I want. Give me my Taylor. What I don't want is to continue seeing cuts to departments at universities that are clearly working. And I think it's ridiculous that when a department is successful, it gets to continue to be successful, unless it's an arts department or a language department. And again, language arts, you know, not to say all humanities end up under this. I think there's some humanities that lean a little bit more into protected parts, but especially when we talk about any form of art that could be a little bit dumb or childish, like puppetry, as we were discussing, suddenly any amount of respect that those students, those practitioners, those teachers, in theory deserve, goes out the window on the basis of the form or the function of their art. Shout out to my research partner, John, who brought this debacle to my attention and has sent me just a really stellar quote from The Atlantic about this that highlights, I think, like the deep disrespect. If you want to talk about, we're going to make this budget cut because we have to, you can do that respectfully. I've been laid off twice in my life, furloughed once for COVID, once before that for non-COVID issues. And there was one time where when I was furloughed, I was met with, "We're really sorry to do this. We're going to make sure we can help you. We're going to keep this thing open and that thing open and that, you know, things out of the owner's pocket to ensure that we were okay." And the second time I was furloughed, I was told over a mass company Zoom call. And I'll tell you what, I returned to that first company still to make purchases and give my money. I will probably never return to that second company who treated me with that disrespect. This quote, talking about the disrespect towards the BFA puppetry program at West Virginia University that has a 100% postgraduate placement rate. Faculty and students reported that at a meeting in September, as students walked to the microphone to denounce budget cuts, several members of the Board of Governors rolled their eyes at mentions of puppetry. Here's what I don't get. It's a long list. It's a long list of things I don't get. What I mainly don't get is why it is acceptable to roll one's eyes, to knock one's head back and say, "What does it matter? Who cares? What a stupid thing to get all riled up about," and then get riled up enough to cut it. Not to sound like, I always feel like I end these shows kind of sounding like a cowboy riding off with like one last quote. But hey, if it doesn't matter, it doesn't matter. And if it do, it do. If it matters enough to cut it, if it matters enough that it's a pressing issue, it's a thorn in your side, then say it matters and don't sit there and roll your eyes. If you want to take this department out behind the shed and shoot it, do it the dignity of looking it in the eyes first and telling it you're sorry, like you would with any old dog you actually cared about killing. The thing you don't look in the eyes before you shoot it between its is the thing you hate. And it is amazing to me how it is always these art departments who are not only met with extreme cuts, debilitating, career-ending cuts that affect the students who put their trust in those institutions, who now, if their department or school disappears, have to, at the very least, find a new school. And is that not just one of the biggest strains in life? Anyone who had to go through the school selection process? I haven't revealed my secret identity in this show, which is that while I wasn't a puppetry major, because again, it's only available in two places in America, I did do two semesters of puppetry. And I, to this day, refer to my two semesters of puppetry at UW-Milwaukee as some of the most skill-honing, hands-on hours I had in university. I learned more from that puppetry class than I did in years of shop classes in high school, years of hands-on work with woodworking towards furniture making, set making, things like this. The practical skills of creation. Some would say that that's the opposite of war, even. I learned not from making a matchbox car in Boy Scouts, but by making an octopus puppet for a show that I was in. And I think that's sick in a good way, and I think it's sick in a bad way, that there are people riled up enough to say, we have to get rid of this, we have to cut it, even though it's quite clearly financially solvent. It's doing fine. They have a 100% placement rate. This is not a department that is failing its students like so many in America today. It is ridiculous and so obvious why this is being done. Look at this. I mean, not to be the puppet head for a second, but can we look at Sesame Street alone? The impact it has had culturally on getting people to be ever so slightly kinder to each other. And isn't that, at the end of the day, one of the best things we can do? I apologize for blathering so long. I want to invite Tom from West Dallas on the air. Tom, I can give you about a minute. Run for it, my friend.
Then I will try to make this quick. I taught technical theater to high school students for 17 years. Of that, in about my ninth year of teaching, the school dropped about almost $50,000 on a new lighting system for the auditorium and other things that were badly needed. I had a gym teacher come up to me and say, that money should have went to the sports program.
Right.
And this, like, I think it's my eighth or ninth year of doing this. And I said to him, I'm like, you know, out of the 8-9 years I've been doing this now, I said, I have at that time 14 students who are either in college for taking technical theater, or they're in the field now, making money, making good money doing this stuff.
I hate to cut you off there, Tom, but you know what that is? To say that money, those students, they go on to get real careers in this. And I feel maybe the way you're going, not everybody who goes through gym class becomes a professional athlete. But hey, you know what that is? That's karma, baby. I'll see you live tomorrow. You wouldn't know.